Thanks for everybody for joining in today. We here at Favela Sound often, of course, talk amongst ourselves, like which bands do we all like? And there are not a lot of bands that everybody on our crew likes, like two or three handfuls. But one of them is Locrian. We'll also talk about the question of why we all like Locrian. But therefore, I'm very, very happy to have all three members of the band here with us today. So guys, thanks for joining.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Yeah.
Our pleasure.
Happy to be here.
I have to ask this first because it really struck me. Between the last record, New Catastrophism, and the one before, it took you 7 years and all of a sudden it's only two. What happened? Do you guys have like a second coming or?
It's a lot. I mean, I think, you know, COVID was in the middle of that. Yeah. I think, you know, we were working on stuff and we live in separate parts of the United States. You know, we have been practicing and working on a bunch of different ideas. And then COVID kind of came in the middle of that as we were demoing and thinking about stuff and kind of in the post part of that. As we started to get things together, we decided to kind of do something different rather than work on the tracks we had been kind of demoing and thinking about. We kind of improvised a record around New Catastrophism. And then I think after that, and we even have on New Catastrophism, there's an extra record of Ghost Frontiers. Mm-hmm. And we kind of decided to return to some of those ideas that we had been working on for Entering. So some of these songs are like 7 years old.
So some of the ideas from some of these songs on Entering are very old, like pre pandemic. Like we were working on ideas, sharing them, but then, you know, obviously everything happened.
I took a few new jobs, moved to different cities a few times.
Yes.
So that is, you know, I'll take the brunt of that. I started a PhD program. I was like, why not start a PhD program on top of a full-time job, on top of doing stuff in Locrian and other things. So all of those things have slowed things down. For me, PhD is almost done, almost in the bag. We're getting back to, you know, getting excited about recording and playing live again. And I hope it's not going to be another 7 years before we come out with something new after this.
No. So what I meant to say is it's Andre's fault that all this took so long.
His fault. My fault.
Yeah, I've heard that for people of a certain age, you know, doing a late PhD in life becomes the thing.
Yeah.
Right. You're doing it, Andre.
I'm almost done. It's cool.
PhD in what?
I'm doing educational policy and leadership. So it's I'm basically studying how the American quality assurance system works in higher education. It's very different from most other countries.
Yeah. Because you have to be rich to get a good education.
Well, we've got something for everyone. We've got things that you can pay a lot for, things that you can pay not very much for.
Yeah.
So there's just this wide diversity of kinds of institutions here.
That's true. But before anybody from the Americans now is like pointing the finger at me being a teacher and saying stuff like that, yes, it's the same way over here. If you come from a good background, your education is naturally going to be a little more elaborate. And yes, that's true. And sure. There are certain schools that normal people just can't afford, also here in Germany. Sure. Also, something that is interesting between New Catastrophism and Terrain, there is once in a while no other record, no split, no collaboration record, no nothing, no remix stuff. That is also something new. Is that also something that you like? deliberately decided on, okay, let's focus on the new record. Let's focus on Enterrain, not go this way and that way.
Well, we did the Solar Lodge EP, which was recorded around the same time. But that was part of the sessions and something that we had done in our last round live. We, when we were playing, we covered Solar Lodge by Coil. And
great choice.
Kind of like when we went in the studio, thank you. And kind of like when we went in the studio to work on Enterrain, the idea, I think, was, you know, we focused, that was kind of the focus in some ways, was putting that down and focusing us on, I would say, like, structure a little bit, maybe. I think that kind of was like narrowing the lens a little bit. And after that, we had this idea, like these remixes and, you know, Dome from Fulci and Paul from Blood Incantation, and Jonathan Kennedy, an old noise friend of ours, all kind of really came through with some awesome remixes. So it was kind of a fun industrial EP kind of idea. But it was all recorded at the same time we were putting down some of the tracks for Enterrain, kind of in the first round or so. Really did help set the tone, you know.
But I think that in between like Infinite Disillusion and New Catastrophism, there's that's the quiet period. I don't think it was intentional.
Those two remixes that were done, if you like.
Yes. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. But go on, Stephen.
Yeah, I mean, we all spoke to each other. We were in communication like all the time. Like, but it was just, and I think Andre was busy with school and, you know, like moving and stuff. And I think we're all busy with other things, other, you know, Terrence, the Holy Circle and solo stuff. And, you know, I was busy with other projects and we just stayed busy in our own little, you know, universes, but we were speaking and we knew that, you know, one day that something was going to happen, but other things got in the way.
So, yeah. Yeah.
But then it eventually happened. So, you know, it just all kind of came together. I think New Catastrophism was a good experiment and I think we're all incredibly happy with it. It was something slightly different for the time. Because we wanted to do a record that was originally that was more structured songs, like, you know, it just wasn't in the cards. And I thought that what we did was very appropriate for what was going on in the world. And it, you know, it was a perfect record for that. But now with Enterrain, we're kind of stepping back into where we left off before.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And it's also a way that when you listen to like Enterrain and compare it a little bit with New Catastrophism, it becomes obvious that those are records that also come from different places. It's interesting, when I first listened to the new record a few days ago, it was after I had already heard the first single, and I was super impressed by the soundscape and the overall terrain that you were touching or that you are touching on the new record. Because I think I have never heard, at least that's my hearing of it, I have never heard a record that is as much 80s and 90s by you guys than this one. I'm very sure that is not a deliberate decision, but is that something that you can enjoy, like a lot of 80s and a lot of 90s stuff? And if so, then what kind of 80s and 90s music?
I mean, when I was writing a lot of the guitar stuff, I was listening to a lot of the early Cult stuff and like the Southern Death Cult and like really like that early death rock. And so when I listen to what I was playing on some of this stuff, I'm thinking about, you know, the sounds that were coming out of that kind of band. I was thinking about other things like the first Public Image Limited couple records. I love the guitar playing on those records, and I think it like really influenced other bands like Lungfish. And when I was writing some of the guitar parts, I was taking this like this approach of thinking about that kind of early post-punk stuff. And then I was also I enjoyed just like looking for new ways to approach things, and so I was playing around with like two-hand tapping, which I guess which like goes into my early interest in like listening to like Van Halen and Billy Sheehan play bass. So those are some of my like strange 80s influences on this, but also like I was also listening to a lot of Vinnie Riley
Drudy Column. Yeah.
And so that was inspiring some of the like the finger picking that I was doing. So on my end of the things, that's where that was coming from. And it was also, you know, like this early shoegaze stuff that I think was somewhat influential as well. So that's my part, but I don't know. What do you guys think?
I was just going to say that I think that, that's kind of spot on, like the 80s, 90s, because that's, I mean, a lot of the stuff I listen to is like from that era. Like I would say like more than 50% of it, but like I was like just hearing the sounds that we were creating in the studio, it was very there was like kind of like a thrash vibe, like some of the guitar tones, some of the sounds and stuff like that. I was just like, it's kind of like a, which is perfect for me because I was and still am a huge fan of like 80s, early 90s thrash. So those are big, that's big for me. And to see it brought in for some of this record, it's perfect. You know, some of like early death metal stuff and stuff like, you know, like early electronic stuff, like, or bands that are using electronics, like Depeche Mode, you know, stuff like that. Like that's perfect. Which I'm a fan of, and to use, you know, that was a little bit of an influence as well. I mean, on my part, you know, the mix of acoustic instruments, electronic instruments, and kind of a seamless, so you don't know at some point like what is that, like synthetic or is it real, like, you know, like, and I wanted that in there.
Yeah.
So that was big for me. I'm really glad that I haven't heard much yet, because not too many people have heard the whole record, but if you're saying like you hear that, that's great. That makes me feel really good that you do hear that, because that's what I want.
Yeah. I think that, you know, from like, I think the first track that's out had like our kind of like, we wanted this, you know, there's always been this conversation that we've had since the band started was with like 90s death metal. And, you know, and I think to me, like Excarnate Light with a thrash kind of ending was a lot of fun. And I think the whole record to me was a lot of us saying like, trying things we haven't done before and pushing each other, like, what if we do this at this point? You know, or even like Black Prisons of Our Dead Age was kind of like this dark, shoegazy, dreamy nightmare thing that we were kind of going with that had a lot of really interesting post-rock, but also this kind of, I don't know, yeah. So I think that like, picking up on that, the shoegaze, the death metal, the thrash, or the kind of synth pop. And then when you say it all together, it doesn't sound that great, but it kind of was like our headspace was, it's kind of who we are, but it's like where we really pushed ourselves. And it's nice to hear that back. Thanks, Torsten.
There is one genre which would combine all of the things that you have said, and I'm pretty sure you didn't think about it. But if I had to file the new record under one genre alone, I would come up with Dungeon Synth.
Dungeon Synth. Okay.
I don't know if I've heard it. I don't know. I mean,
well, you mean you have not heard the genre, or you have not heard anybody in Dungeon Synth?
No, no. Well, either. I have not heard that. But I don't know if I have heard any Dungeon Synth. I don't know categorized under that.
I'm gonna have to
look it up.
Do you know a band from Switzerland called Paysage d'Hiver? It's a black metal band,
no.
But yeah, they are so lo-fi that it sounds as if it's a synth.
Yeah.
But you will find a lot of stuff under that one.
Is it would Stryborg be considered Dungeon Synth? You remember that band?
Yeah, that one?
Maybe the later-ish stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, it's more also a band like Summoning would be called Dungeon Synth. It's basically stuff that is very often written on a guitar, but then laid out on the synths. And it's also very often, and now comes the thing that you might not like, it's very often very lo-fi, that it becomes this huge space underneath everything. And then on top of it, you find sprinkles of a guitar here, of a bass line there. And that is something that struck me with a new record. There are, again, as usual, loads of layers. Of course, that is Locrian, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
But there is like always an ongoing theme in every song. And then you put I don't know how many tracks. On some of the tracks, I just simply stopped counting after five or six different lines that I heard.
Yeah.
and that's probably not even going to be close. But that is something that you did on this record extremely well. I like that broadness with the sprinkles on top. It's really nicely done.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And then one thing also came to me that was interesting. I think this record is one of your most accessible ones.
Yeah.
I agree with that. Yeah.
I was kind of
hoping that it would be.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
I think too, I was hoping that if you've been following along so far, that there'd be this juxtaposition with the last record, that New Catastrophism, and this record would be not they'd be mirror reflections in this negative way or whatever, and where New Catastrophism was long and dense and kind of epic, and you know, that this would be kind of much more condensed and brief. I think we kind of, where in the past we maybe would have extended things, we were much more the idea is expressed, and you know, we were as we were structuring songs, we would hold ourselves to a little bit tighter of a structure, which is very intentional.
Yeah, it's already obvious in the track lengths. You know, the tracks on New Catastrophism were extremely long, and now you have songs which are nearly pop format.
Yeah. 4 or 5 minutes.
It's climbing the charts. You know.
We're... I already see you rocking the VMAs next year. but honestly, did you guys sit down and say okay, let's not get it too long. Let's cut to the chase.
I think for some of it, we didn't want to get it. We wanted to be succinct, and I think that there was, at least on my part, I was thinking about I think we all discussed this at one point, was it would be cool if it was more narrative. So a lot of Terrence's lyrics will be written in this third person kind of approach, and this was more personal, and I thought that was cool. And we tried different things to sort of tell more of a narrative, and of course this is Terrence's wheelhouse, but For some of it, you know, I would be like, all right, what if you try like whispering the lyrics here and repeat what you do later in the song? And he did that. And I like, personally, I think it tells, it's like easier for me as if I were in the place of a listener to sort of emotionally attach to those songs. So I was thinking a little bit about that stuff. I think we were all trying to make this more to the point and direct than New Catastrophism. So if you really think about where we ended in the last time we were actively touring, it was around 2015 when we released Infinite Disillusion, which was probably our most structured record in a lot of ways. And we wanted to really think about like, what is the next step after that? And this is what came out of that.
So Dungeon Synth.
Dungeon Synth.
No, I mean, yeah. I think it was a definite conversation. And I think also there was, like I said earlier, it's like we were really thinking about what have we not done before. And so I think we were challenging ourselves as we wrote the songs to not repeat those ideas, or maybe there'll be like a reference to something from the past, but it was more like, how can we flip that and turn it into something that we haven't accomplished? It was that conversation of like, oh, you know, in the past we would, you know, have these really long intros into the song, and now we'd be like, well, let's just start with the song, like, you know, like,
yeah, or the intro being very short. Yeah, like,
yeah.
And also, yeah, one LP, we wanted everything to fit on one record.
Like, it was definitely like, that, yeah, yeah, that was, yeah, that was definitely so, a conversation for sure. Yeah, yeah. So we were not going to shy away from accessibility. We were kind of like like, it'd be, what would happen if we tried that, for sure.
Exactly.
Then there are two questions, but come to that. I mean, like, first of all, how difficult is it for you as a band to come up after such a long period of time? How difficult is it to come up with stuff that you haven't done, or a way that you haven't expressed yourself in after all the time?
Well, like Steven said, it wasn't for all that time, we were still hanging out, playing, you know, like Andre would come here, Steven would come here. We would jam and like think of ideas. And then, you know, we're having this conversation, and we could let those ideas, like we'd have this giant file of just like riffs, and then that could help us kind of like form the structure of the song and what, and that conversation, well, what happens next? Or this is territory we've already been on, let's do something different. So I think the time, I mean, there's a theme on the record, and one of them is about time. That time really did help this record kind of take form, like geology or something. Like, it really, like, we were able to like really kind of think about each track, and then as each track was kind of taking formation, this structure of the narrative, like Andre was saying, around the lyrics. So I think time was really helpful.
Yeah. I think we're also, I think we've been playing together quite a long time, and I think we're lucky that when we all get together, we can kind of come up with things pretty quickly, in the studio, you know, like improvise stuff, hone it down just within a matter of, you know, an hour or so, and have a really cool idea. I think it's lucky that we're all able to do that. So
I would also add, being a great engineer in Jay Robbins, kind of,
of course, yeah,
in the room, who was a really helpful creative engineer, and, you know, was capturing the stuff and offering suggestions, and just, yeah, I think that really helped. We had already done a record with him that we kind of came in with very little of a plan. And like, to Steven's point, we had kind of proven to ourselves that we could come in with practically nothing and make a record.
We had nothing, really. Happy. Really.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were just, for New Catastrophism, essentially nothing. We had our own ideas in our heads, but we just walked in and just like, okay, who's going to go first? Who's going to put something down? And someone put something down and we're like, okay, who's got an idea to put, do something over that. And it was just a lot of that, but we did that with entering too, but not on such a big scale. I mean, we had more ideas. Like we could, we had a bag of ideas that we could kind of pull things from, but Jay was a big help. You know, he had suggestions and ideas and so that was a big one.
Before anybody out there is wondering who the guys are talking to, they're talking about Jay Robbins, who's not only a very successful producer by now, but who's also the mastermind, correct me if I'm wrong, behind Jawbox, right?
Yeah,
correct.
Yeah,
and Burning Airlines.
Yes, yeah. Burning Airlines as well. A guy who has been around for decades, and that is interesting, comes from a little different background than you guys do, at least a little. But he's one of the producers for the last 10, 15 years, something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And interestingly, it just comes to my mind, when you talk about Jawbox, then you're already back again in the early to mid 90s, you know, with that kind of punk thing going on. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Jay's was, and it's been interesting. I've known him for a long time, and was, you know, through recording with him, and I think he's has a great sense, and his interest in music is super broad, and you know, but it's just a person you can trust. I think that's mm-hmm. like the important thing. He fit in with us, and you know, I think it's been a really great relationship.
Clicked.
Sure. And obviously, like, from his time in, you know, Jawbox, you know, which was a pretty influential group for me when I was in like high school. So it's kind of like you know, exciting, but you know, but just such an approachable person, and you know, yeah, I mean, it's, I guess it gets us back into that. I don't know how influenced by Jawbox it sounds, but it's definitely like, you know I trust him a lot and his expertise, and
he's got a great studio too. It's very, very nice.
Yes.
Very nice.
That's also important. Something that has always been important for Locrian, and that I always liked about the music, and it's also something that I like on Enterrain a lot, is the rhythm patterns, the beats, let's say the drums, for however you want to call it. Do you work on that together, or who comes in with the idea, okay, here we have this, and we could part it, then we could put it together with this guitar by Andre? How does that go along? How do you get the things together?
I think there's a few different ways. I think Andre or Terrence might suggest something to, you know, like have an idea for something, like maybe, you know, kind of caveman-ish drums here, like. but I would say a lot of it's just, how is it? I just come up with some really cool beats.
That is the best answer you could give. That is like,
I would say,
I like the modesty in it.
Yeah.
I would say from the outside, though, it is, I think these are some of, and I've told Steven this, I think these are some of like my favorite patterns. Like I'll like, you know, as we've been like, you know, when you make a record, you have to listen to it like so many times, and I would just be like, that's such an, I just would like, there'd be tracks, I'm like, that's a cool pattern. Like what, like I, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, like, the world is gone, there is no world, you know, like, yeah, there's some really,
cool, I wanted to mix it up a bit. I wanted to mix it up a little bit for this one and do some stuff that was a little different. So, but it still stay within our sound, you know, like still, yeah. It's still us, but I wanted to mix it up a bit. And especially, like I said earlier, like with the, you know, playing around with like drum machines and like my drums, mixing them together, sampling sounds. I wanted to do stuff like that. And it just kind of came together. Like, and Jay was on it. Like when yeah. I just mentioned stuff like that, he was like, okay, I know what to do. Like, let's do this. He's like, find a good sound that you like within the, like the old Roland drum sounds and stuff like that. Like find something that you like, and then we can kind of like, you know, connect them. But it's like real drums, but with like these old sounds, old vintage sounds. But it's, yeah, I don't know. It's just coming up with stuff, you know, because I don't work on like when, you know, because I'm in Chicago, and they'll send me ideas, but I'm, you know, like guitar riffs or stuff like that or synth stuff. I'll listen to them, but I'm not going into my practice space and like really like working on ideas like, okay, this is going to be great. Like mm-hmm. here, I don't do a lot of that. I do some of it, but I don't try to overthink it, because when we go into the studio, I mean, things could change completely. Like, you know, like we don't know exactly. And I like coming up with some stuff just like when we're there, just like, you know, something, just pull something out, just start playing it, you know, and see if it works. And usually it does, you know, not all the time, but usually it does.
And let me ask a connecting question to that. When you say like, it could change completely. I mean, like you guys already hinted at like, hopefully going back on tour and bringing all the stuff to mm-hmm. Europe, like maybe like only 8 mm-hmm. kilometers away from me, you said, like where I can easily go and hang out at.
Of course.
Of course. Yeah. Working on it right now.
But no, just quickly, could it be that the songs again completely change on stage?
That's possible, but I mean, you know, the one thing, you know, is that we haven't like played live in a while, and that used to be kind of where a song would kind of, like the end of a song would develop into almost a new song or a transition to another song. And we would, you know, so that kind of play is definitely something that we're looking forward to getting back into, but probably the song as the song will stay, you know, relatively similar. But I could see intros and outros starting to be like our more improvisational moments. But yeah,
or extending certain sections of songs, maybe, yeah. I don't know, you know, but yeah, I see them staying pretty true to the recordings, you know, for the most part, but you never know. Hey, you never know. We might write in a whole new song or two and just go play them.
And with a few of the tracks on the new record, extending them is on the one hand pretty easy, and on the other hand, pretty difficult, because aren't there like 2 tracks or 3 tracks on the record which end like right on the second?
Yes.
So it could be easy on the one hand, so you know, like just make it longer. And on the other hand, it's like,
yeah,
how do we make them longer?
Yeah.
Or just stick with ending them just like right on the second. Just like, we'll just have the sound guy kill the power.
There's easier ways to do that. There's easier ways. Like, we could just stop. That would be the easiest way.
Yeah, but imagine after 15 minutes, the concert is over, you can go home.
Yeah.
I think that
you'll have a beer.
I think that would go over really well.
Yeah.
Very well.
I like 15-minute sets.
We all know grindcore bands that cannot go any longer than 20 because they're then just wasted. I mean, like,
yeah.
That was a reason why the Locust never played a show longer than 30 minutes.
Yeah,
it's great. Yep. But sometimes you've made the point, like, does the locust need to play longer than 30 minutes? Is there a new idea that will be expressed after 30 minutes? No. We've got it, you know?
Or I mean, like, think of those minor fret records, right? Like 12 songs, 13 minutes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Perfect.
But as we have mentioned, touring, are you guys planning on going? You don't have to disclose anything, but are there plans of taking the baby we're on tour?
We are in the middle of planning our a U.S. tour at the moment.
Europe, you
and
said?
And beyond that, U.S. Europe, I'm sure we'll have some information shortly. Mm-hmm. But at the moment, our conversation is a U.S. Tour for the summer, and we're just kind of like waiting to hear back on some dates and stuff like that, but everything is starting.
Wheels are in motion.
So are you guys already excited? Is it more excitement about going on tour again, or more like angst?
I think excited.
I can't wait.
I'm
excited. Totally. I mean, also, it's like that part of our band that was a huge part of when we started this band, and was playing, and what happened creatively when we would play was really cool. And I think songs would just, you know, once you play that same song over and over, and you start thinking about different connections, and, you know, changes happen, and that's exciting. You know, I think that, and I do miss that kind of creative element, you know, like to our chemistry or whatever, that like live, you know, there's this really cool harmony that Andre finds, and we're like, dude, why didn't we record that thing? You know, like, and then it becomes like a thing we do live, and we look, and I look forward to those little shifts that as you do something for a while, and you know, the crucible of the studio is done, and you're now in the kind of like this new environment. It's exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
And of course, being German, I have to ask, who came up with the idea of naming one track Umwelt and the other Innenwelt?
That was me.
but you do know that both are not real contradictions, right?
They're not real contradictions. No, I don't. I'm trying to remember. I have my notes. Let me see if I can pull up my. I had these notes.
What is that?
While Terrence is looking up his notes, just to explain for everybody outside of Germany, Umwelt is an English environment, and Innenwelt is something like your inner status, your inner refuge, so to speak.
Thank you. And this was from a philosopher, I think it, I think it was from this Thomas Nagel book that I was referencing quite a bit. So that was me. So it was like two different environments, right? Like, and then an internal environment or an external environment, which was like the idea. And because this record, like Andre was saying, is very personal, and probably like the first time I've used like first person in my lyrics, you know, this was definitely like kind of trying to find this balance between how our previous records are very distance and kind of reporting on this destroyed, mutating landscape, and this record is much more from my perspective, kind of like, or a character's first person perspective, but it's me, whatever, and looking at this destroyed environmental wasteland and thinking about what I've left for my kids, and kind of like this, the interior landscape is as destroyed as the exterior landscape, like that I haven't made anything better, and for my children, you know, and just kind of grappling with that, like morally, I guess, in a way. And that was and I don't know, there are these two words I had written down in our note thing, and I was like, these are really cool to kind of like use for like those more ambient instrumentals, you know,
like the little interludes. Yeah works well,
definitely. Yeah, I've been talking about the lyrics, and can you maybe give us a little hint on what, I mean, like you have spoken about the difference between internal and external.
Sure.
Can you give us a little bit more info on that? Because, I mean, the record is going to be coming out in a few days, so
sure. People
want a little bit more bait.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, again, for me, it's like the first song we released, the first song on the record, is about kind of like this ghost of a parent telling its children not to mourn it because it doesn't deserve their sorrow. And you know, it's the whole record's like describing this like wasted kind of like trash heap, I guess. And throughout it is like this idea that it's like, I don't know, for me as like a parent, kind of reflecting on, you know, what is the future of this planet, and kind of this like feeling of guilt, I guess, and regret, and that it's horrible. And I don't know, like, you know, here in the States, there's this awful like train crash that happened, and it essentially poisoned this town of East Palestine in Ohio. And I was listening to this reporter who was talking about how the streams all look like streams, but when you disturb the silt in the bottom, these like rainbow blooms come out because of all of the chemicals from this vinyl chloride. And I was just like, well, that's really beautiful and disgusting and horrible and apocalyptic. And that to me is like the landscape, you know, that I'm like, I've always been kind of interested in, but I wanted to kind of imbue it with a sense more from myself, just of from me. And with the record will come like a booklet of short fiction, of speculative fiction, like science fiction, and kind of furthering these ideas around kind of each song. Yeah, so that's kind of where it's coming from.
Ben, question for Andre and Steven. How do you feel about things like that when Terrence is coming up with those ideas? I mean, like, of course, apart from the fact that you're probably a little baffled by like how interesting it is, but
for me, I think, you want to go, Steven?
No, go for it. Sorry.
I think it's great. I think it really resonates with the sort of the trajectory of our lyrics and our themes in the past. For me, I was really, you know, encouraging Terrence to be more personal on this. And I thought that it was the way that he did that was a very interesting way that was very appropriate for, you know, for our historical context as a band. For me, I don't have kids. I consciously did not have kids because I think there are some just ethical problems that I have with having kids and creating more kids. And so that's something that, you know, has been a personal decision of mine. I like kids. I like humanity. I'm actually not a misanthrope. but I thought that, you know, like the way that the album has this narrative of leaving nothing for your kids, I think it resonates with a lot of people who are probably that have kids, and we're seeing now the catastrophic climate change that's happening. And you know, if you read the news and the reports from actual scientists, it's like it keeps getting worse than we think, and that's something that I'm incredibly sad about. So I think all of this really resonates with me, and I guess that's all I'll say about that.
Yeah, it's just I feel the same. I think we all, the three of us, feel the same way about it, and it's just the way it's what we have been doing, and since you know, even before I was in the band, like it's just like the theme and what we're talking about, what the message we're trying to get across. I think it's, and it still continues, but for this one, like they both said, it's more personal on Terrence's part, like, and I like that it's like him, you know, for the most part, like speaking, not just like an overall, it's more Terrence speaking about this is more personal. So yeah, I mean, yeah, that's it.
Andre, one question from one teacher to the other educational philosopher. When you speak about the fact that what we give to our children is less than what we got from our parents, which is an ongoing thing for a couple of decades now, and you then consciously say, okay, like, with that situation being a fact, I rather not have kids. Isn't that at the same time also denying your kids the ability to change something? Those hypothetical kids.
You're right about that. But I guess part of one of the things that really influenced me was one of the faculty that I had is an undergraduate, and helping me understand the repercussions of, and this is like a totally polarizing thing for politicians to even talk about today, but world overpopulation. I mean, the world didn't get to have 1 billion people until the 1800s, and now we're at 7.5 billion of humans are driving and using diapers and polluting and causing carbon to offset into the world. And so there's also this recognition that there are other ways that I can add value than just having kids. Like, one of the things that I did in Chicago was I did the Big Brothers program, and that was me trying to have an influence on some little kids in a positive way so that they could hopefully make some kind of change in the world. So I guess that's a bit of my philosophy, and also, you know, being a teacher.
Don't get me wrong, I can totally understand the decision. Yeah. I can totally understand the decision.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think even to Andre's point, I think that like the real inspiration lyrically and throughout the stories and themes, I went to our, like, where I live, there's like a dump, and I went to visit the dump.
Yeah, it's Baltimore.
And
it was just, like, what'd you expect?
But it was like, you know, like I think I was like bringing like some home, like I helped refinish something in my house, and I was like bringing it to the dump where you have to bring it, and it just was like this hopeless, like, oh, I did everything right, and it's just like, oh, we're just gonna stack all this toxic like stuff here. It's just a stack of it, like in the rain, and I was like, oh man. And and just, you know, like as these giant like earth movers are moving around these piles of trash, and birds are flying around. And I was like, this is inspiring actually, but I'm probably the only person who thinks that, but you know, I, that was kind of like the thought of like just millions of tons of garbage kind of organized and piled and buried and forgotten, like
skipped out to the ocean
or something like that. Yeah, it just was like, this is like a really formative experience we had as a band was we visited the Cahokia Mounds outside of St. Louis, and thinking of like these mounds of earth that were like burial mounds that were left behind as this group disappeared, it just like to me as like you start to think about like that these landfills and what's the future, and you know, and you know, if you've read, you know, Samuel Delaney or Ursula Le Guin or J.G. Ballard, or your brain just starts like flipping through all this, like, what's the future of this? And you start speculating. And so even like with Andre saying like all this trash and stuff, it's like that was, they literally, like, for me, it was like, whoa, when you kind of see it in this small, and that's the small scale. That's not like the big scale. Sure. You know?
To also give a historical perspective to that, creating landscape through wasteland is nothing new. There is one of the hills in Rome, which is basically only an overgrown heap of empty amphoras in which they had like oil and wine and stuff. But there is a difference between that and the waste that we produce nowadays. You know, all of that stuff is in a way still organic mass, even the amphoras. And the stuff that Terrence is talking about is toxic, you know, stuff that we simply cannot get away with. I still remember, how long does it take for the butt of a cigarette to really decompose? Like a few years, doesn't it? There is something like that.
It must be years,
right?
Years.
And that is just one single of those.
Yeah. Okay. It's like a fiberglass. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there, I can understand when the guys are saying, like, we live in strange times. Last question, and that is something that I would like to quickly talk about, the title of a record, End Terrain. And that also connects to what Andre just said, you know, about children and about what we give them and stuff like that. Do you guys feel as if we have already crossed the point of no return?
We're at a point where it's much more challenging, and to create a sustainable future for humanity. And we have this, to me, we have this concept that it often is used, is this concept of sustainable development, which is an oxymoron. Like, we have electric cars, which in the US, there's this huge effort to promote electric cars, although we don't have the infrastructure really for them. And those also put lots of challenges on the environment with like lithium mining, which is toxic as well as mining for other rare earth elements. And so we're on this trajectory where we have more and more technology. We have AI that's changing the way that we live. And it's making it challenging to turn the, turn things around for the planet. So it's a good question.
Yeah, I think that you hear, like, you know, I would say I agree with Andre, and I think you hear those stories of like there's different species that we thought were extinct but have like made these comebacks. So it's like there are these like winds, obviously environmentally, that are happening, but it's like again, literally, like this week was that East Palestine story of Ohio, you know. It's like man, that was just a year ago. And you know, I think you know, it's just we're close to that line of,
what about all the stuff that's going on that we don't even hear about, you know? Like I mean, there's so much. I mean your imagination can run wild, you know, like with things that are going on that we, you know, the news or whatever news outlet is, just, you know, we don't hear about it, but it's just like terrible shit that's going on. But I like to be optimistic and think that there still might be hope and for the future, you know. But it's really hard to think that
it's
when
really
you
hard
see
to see
and
that,
read
it?
All this, that there, it's very, it's very bleak. So sometimes I'm like, do I just need to like stop fucking reading about all this and stop, you know? But it's unavoidable. I mean, and that would be a terrible way out of it. But there's a, it's very disturbing. But I still would like to think that there's a chance. you know, because there's a lot of good things that are going on out there, and people are doing a lot of good things, that are trying to do good things and organizing, you know, things that are helping us as a whole and individual. But it's tricky, it's tough.
Hopefully this will inspire someone to take some kind of action in their lives that will make a difference, whether if that's really small or something that's on a more macro level. So yeah,
I still believe that if anybody did a tiny little bit, everybody out of those 7.68 billion people right now, if everybody did just a tiny little thing, it would help a lot. But anyway, it's unfortunate that we still have to talk about that over and over again. As you guys have already said, we see enough reason to do so.
Well, it would help if we didn't make records about it. Then we wouldn't be talking about it. But
well, but then you could talk about flowers blossoming.
No,
that from a Locrian perspective would also be very interesting.
Yeah.
I like it. That's the theme for the next record.
Well, let's be honest. I mean, like, also, again, from an historical perspective, flowers can also lead to very, very bad things. Back in the 17th or 18th century, there was this tulip craze in the Netherlands.
People
went dog shit crazy about tulips.
Yeah, the speculative markets. Yeah.
There's some right there.
That's an interesting one. Right there.
See, even flowers are not always a good thing. Not always a good thing for the people involved, apart from me, is the infamous quickfire round that Terrence already had to go through, but he still has to go through again because I came up with other pairings.
All right. Okay.
And for Andre and for Steven, you will get two alternatives, have to choose one of them and give a short explanation. Let's start off with something simple. Springsteen versus Van Halen.
Van Halen, early Van Halen.
Yeah. Van Halen for sure. Yeah. Everything up to, I would say, like 1984.
It's Springsteen all the way. I'm sorry. I have, like, everything on vinyl. I'm a nerd. Tunnel of Love is an amazing record. Human Touch. I'm back to Greens from Asbury Park. I'm a huge Springsteen fan. I was born in New Jersey, so you have to be.
Comes with muffled
smoke. You'd pick Bon Jovi if that was a choice.
No, Springsteen's the only one. Yeah. No one calls Bon Jovi the boss.
Yeah, because he looks like the boss's mom by now. Let's go back to the post-punk thing. Susie versus Blondie.
Oh, Blondie for sure. I'm 100% behind that. Blondie, I was a huge fan when I was a kid. And honestly, I think she was my first crush.
I'm gonna go with Susie.
I think Susie, because the guitar playing on like Juju and all that stuff, just phenomenal. He was a brilliant guitar player. I love Blondie though. Totally. I mean, I think Parallel Lines is like a huge influence. I think that's a great record. That's some sick drumming on those records. That's like
very much.
I agree. I'm that's a tough one, but I probably listen to more Susie than Blondie, but I definitely will go through these big Blondie phases because they're great.
Yeah, you should remember those questions are never easy. I'm not trying to be nice. Let's go to the 80s and to some British indie stuff. The Cure versus The Smiths.
Oh, The Cure for sure. Oh man, by far.
Yeah.
Sorry, Smith, but Morrissey's legacy is just too challenging for me.
Let's not think about him as a guy because the guy is awful. But
I will only watch Johnny Marr now playing Smith songs because I just can't. Morrissey's is such a douche. Like that guy's awful. But The Cure, totally. I mean, like, I've seen The Cure so many times. I saw them like 2 years ago and I'm just like blown away. They're amazing. Their records are great. I mean, I think for our band, Disintegration is like one of those albums that were like, it should sound heavy as this.
I mean, I listen to The Cure pretty often. And I can't remember the last time I listened to The Smiths. Intentionally.
Thing, yeah.
I'm not sure if you noticed, but your band is a little heavier than The Cure.
It's fine. It's okay. Yeah.
There is one sentence by Morrissey still that I would love to see. Didn't he say like a few years ago, like 10, 15 years ago, that he would rather eat his balls before going on stage with Johnny Marr again? That is something that I would like to see. Wow. Because, you know, like a vegan doing that thing.
Yes. Is cannibalism not vegan, I guess?
Wait.
Self-cannibalism.
Self-cannibalism. I mean, no animals.
Suicide is still not illegal.
True. Sure.
For all the Smiths fans out there, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
For all the Morrissey fans out there, I'm not.
Yeah. But Johnny Marr is like he's great. I think he's actually like watching videos of him now, kind of playing guitar and like explaining these riffs, and just you're like, you know, you think about how he really changed things. But yeah, it's The Cure for sure.
When we talk about guitar play, it's going into a very, very different direction. Prelis versus Gorguts.
Ooh.
I'm going to have to go with Gorguts.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also because Gorguts. I'm not that familiar with Kralis, so I'm
a Kralis fan, but Gorguts, it's, yeah.
Yeah.
No slouches in Gorguts.
I mean, for sure. They're just like shredders. Yeah, they're really good. Yeah.
I got to go listen to Gorguts, actually.
I really like that. They did that Porous Resonance Abyss thing with all the cool synths, Kralis, that last one. I thought that was amazing. Like, total shocker. I don't think they did. I'm looking at it now. I don't think they did a vinyl, a CD and cassette, but it's like, they got to do that one on vinyl. Like, that record's amazing. I love that. That's like, I think it was last year or something like that. They put that out.
Doesn't Adam put out a bunch of stuff? Gilead, doesn't he do the Kralis stuff? Or no?
I think so.
I'm thinking someone else.
Yeah. He did. He put out a bunch of their stuff. Yes. Yeah. But Gorguts. Right. It's great. Yeah. I might be seeing Gorguts this May when they're playing Death Fest. So, which I'm excited about. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Exodus versus Anthrax.
That's Anthrax for sure for me. Yeah, 100%. I mean, I Bonded by Blood is a classic and will always be a classic. And Pleasures of the Flesh, I do like that. I just listened to that not that long ago.
Yeah,
But Anthrax, I listened to Sound of White Noise yesterday. So, you know, by far the best Anthrax record, and I will go on
record. Good record. It's a stretch for me too, even though much props to Bounded by Blood as being one of my favorite records. Even the one that was re-recorded is pretty sweet.
Yeah, the re-recording of Bounded by Blood. I forgot what they gave it a different name. It's not Bounded by Blood. It's something else. But it's heavy. It sounds angry.
But the Belladonna Anthrax for me.
Yeah.
I think that I recently, because my son got into a lot of thrash and he brought Bonded by Blood back into the house. And I was like, yeah, this rules. Like, I don't know. So for me lately, that's been like he'll put it on. He'll be like, he practices guitar to it. And I'm like, all right, like, that's pretty cool. Like, yeah. I forgot. I just like, you know, like, yeah, you know, it wasn't something I listened to all the time, but probably more for me for that. Anthrax wasn't as as big for me growing up, but it, because of these guys, I've gotten into it. But the Exodus Banda by Blur,
yeah, it's like, yeah, it's one of the things I listen to it like all the time. It was like the early Anthrax, yeah, for sure.
I actually was listening to it recently. Actually, I just like thrash mix. I had it on. I was like, yeah, this is good. Yeah.
I only have one band tattoo, and it is Anthrax.
Yeah. So Steven told someone.
I know. I'll admit it. Yeah. And I got it. I got it when I was like 16 with like a guitar needle.
You do know that I will use that for like the text to go along with this interview. Like,
this is,
you want to know what kind of band tattoo Steven has?
It should be the headline.
It will be. Hess like discovers, or no, discloses progress, his band tattoo.
Yeah.
As long as you don't show it, because, you know, we don't want to wear like
everything. No, no, not showing it.
Last year, you've already spoken about the Solar Lodge EP, and you've mentioned one of the Blood Incantation guys doing one of the remixes. So of course the question must be, which side of the Blood Incantation oeuvre do you like more, the death metal side or the ambient / crowd rock side?
Ambient.
Ooh.
I'm going with the death metal side. I mean, I do really like the ambient stuff for sure, but I mean, they're all like incredible musicians, and just like
totally,
I mean, it's like the death metal stuff is just like over the top. It's so fun. It's fun to listen to. What's that?
I appreciate their ambient stuff more.
Yeah. Man, I've seen Blood Incantation a few times, and I'll have to go the death metal side because I just am always impressed. And I mean, I still think it would, I know that they have done some of the ambient live, and I would love to see that. But here, you know,
me too.
In Maryland, whenever they play here, it's definitely like for like Death Fest, or they're on tour with a bunch of other death metal bands. So, but it's always like, I think even seeing that festival, it's like, if I didn't know them, I still would be like, who the hell is this band? Because they're just like so different. Like at a giant festival, you see like 20 bands that all kind of blend together. They just stand out like a, like, you're just like, what are these guys doing? Like, it's really cool. I think that they're just really smart writers, and they have cool riffs, and, you know, they're definitely thinking about it on a different level than just like being brutal or whatever. And yeah, I think I love the death metal side. I love the ambient side. Like, I really was hoping that Maryland Death Fest, they would just come out with synths and play Time Wave Zero and bum every metalhead out, which they didn't do. I love the death metal side. I think it's great. I think they're pretty exceptional. Yeah.
Cocteau Twins versus Slowdive.
Oh, Slowdive, for sure for me. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, great band. Great band. I Cocteau Twins, I don't think I've ever owned a record by them, but I'm obviously am familiar with them, and I've heard them quite a bit, but I'm just more definitely Slowdive. Yeah, really, really like that.
I was literally listening to Head Over Heels last night on from Cocteau Twins. I'm a huge fan. I think he's just a great guitar player, but this is definitely like a tie for me. It's kind of a hard choice. I love Slowdive. I think the story is amazing to me, that like a band can take such a break for all their things, come back and do the self-titled record that was amazing, and then to do
which is killer. Yeah. Every song on that record is great.
Yeah, and then Everything Is Alive, the new record, just to go into that with these phenomenal tracks, and just to like have this second life. It's kind of like a story that I think every band would love that story in a way. It's like that you could go away for whatever and then come back, and it's like you're equally, if not more relevant. I mean, like when Slowdive ended, they were not getting good press. They were not having this great time. And then it's like the decades after, people built them up. And you know, like to kind of have that second wind of a, as a band, and you didn't really compromise on anything. You're still the same band. Like, you know, like they're not, they, you know, like there's some cool new things they're doing, but it, I think that that's like a story that's pretty awesome. Yeah.
Andre.
Octo Twins, love Slow Dive, but Elizabeth Frazier,
yeah,
playing Octo Twins, it's just, it's the, it's the spot.
Okay. Before I pose my next couple, I would like to remind Mr. Hannum of short answers.
Dude.
No.
I wrote a book. No, I wrote a book for a record, dude. Like, that's not happening.
Just encouraging him.
Okay.
Steven, Terrence, I'm not sure if I asked you that last time. If I did, then just leave it out. But Throbbing Gristle versus Einstürzende Neubauten.
You did not ask me that one. Einstürzende Neubauten. Short. Done.
Oh, Neubauten for sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm a huge fan. That's a huge influence for me. That band is incredible. Yeah.
I will join to triangulate this Neubauten.
Yeah.
I'm really happy to see them again in October this year. So
I'm so bummed when they canceled the US tour, right? Because I had tickets, and then, you know, like 2 weeks later, got reimbursed. It's like, oh, bummer.
Yeah, it was, needs a reimbursement, right? Morricone versus Vangelis.
Morricone.
Yeah, Morricone. Yeah.
I feel like I just committed a synth crime, but yes, Morricone.
No. I think everybody who is into soundtracks can understand that choice. Yeah. Two records by Nine Inch Nails, and you have to choose one of them. Pretty Hate Machine versus The Downward Spiral.
Oh, Pretty Hate Machine, for sure. I just listened to that the other day, too. Still killer. I'm Downward Spiral, not a big one for me.
I Pretty Hate Machine.
Spiral as an adult.
Yeah. Those aren't my favorite Nine Inch Nails records. I really like The Fragile, and I like the later, like, Ghosts 1-4, and I think those are great. But I would say Pretty Hate Machine, lately, I've been kind of like, there's something going on. I think it's really special in some of those tracks. And I used to hate it. And it's like, lately it's become something that I'm like, come back to. So I don't know. Pretty Hate Machine.
Two bands who were on a split a couple of years ago, Sutek Hexen versus Sleepwalker. And don't make me pronounce that Chinese name by Sleepwalker. No way.
I don't know.
Sutek Hexen.
Yes. Sutek Hexen, for sure. Yeah.
Kevin Rules.
Yeah.
He's the best.
And the last one, guys. And I know this might be a difficult one. I know about your love for Coil. And I'm not sure if we all agree, but to me, the best Coil record is Scatology. Therefore, I will not give you that one.
Oh, okay.
Love's Secret, what is it, Domain or Decision? I always forget that.
Domain, yeah.
Domain. Love's Secret, Domain versus How to Destroy Angels.
Ooh.
Love's Secret, Domain.
Yeah, I think Love's Secret, Domain.
Because I don't know the other one. Yeah, I don't know sorry. But Love's Secret, Domain for sure. Yeah. That would be my choice then. That was easy.
But would you agree with Scatology being their most important one?
Yes. Oh, yeah, for sure. Definitely. I would. That is.
Yeah.
I mean, by far. It's what we covered where Solar Lodge came off of. So it's a big one for us. But I think, there's just so many records. It's.
I feel like we had this conversation where we did recently. Like, there are so many. And I haven't heard all of them, and to be honest, I mean, there's some of them are a challenging listen.
Yep.
And then there are some that are like killer.
My favorite really is great. I really like the soundtrack, the the ejected soundtrack for the Hellraiser. That's a great,
yeah.
That's a great soundtrack. I love it.
Yeah.
That's a really good
so
one.
So guys, I hope this was not too hard. I hope those choices were not too hard.
No,
that was fun. No, it's always fun.
That was great. I could do that for like an hour.
Yeah, but that would get boring after a certain point. I'm very sure. So first of all, thanks for all the time. Thanks for the great new record. And thanks for coming to Europe soon. Soon as you cross the Atlantic, make sure to give us a heads up. We got a few dudes who would love to see you guys live. Yeah. So enjoy the rest of your day, guys.
Thank you.
Too. Have a good night. Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
All right.
Bye.